Namo Visvataya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pratarane Nivasesha Sunyavadi Praskatya Dezatarane Om Aganatamirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chakshusamilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namah Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sa Pandantikam Vanchakopatubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhai Bacha Patitanam Pabinebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah. The Srimad Bhagavatam begins by a very sad and unfortunate event where Maharaj Prickett becomes cursed by a Brahmin boy. And that curse, or that great misfortune of the protector of the world, the king, the government, such an exalted personality who is so powerful. When he is cursed to die, it's so unfortunate, but something extremely fortunate comes from that. Because, and this is true in our lives, that no one other than Krishna has a life that simply goes in one direction, upward, so to speak. Everyone else's life is mixed with the fortunes and misfortunes and the good and the bad. It's just completely unavoidable. So out of this great misfortune, Ma Bhagavatpu, from my perspective, it's too loud because I tend to get loud anyway. So from this great misfortune was born a great fortune. And that fortune, of course, is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the cause of the misfortune of Maharaj Prickett being cursed was also the supreme desire of the Lord. He wanted Maharaj Prickett home. And also, our acharyas explain, and Srila Prabhupada explains, that it was time for Kali Yuga to begin. And in the presence of Maharaj Prickett, Kali could not exert his influence. And yet, it was inevitable. It had to happen. Kali Yuga occurs. So Maharaj Prickett had to be gracefully taken away from this world. So we know what happens. He sits down at the bank of the Ganga. He makes, as Maharaj was explaining yesterday about Sankalpa, he makes his what was the, Maharaj, what was the word you used? Intent. He expressed his intent, his determination that I will now sit here on the bank of the Ganga, or the bank of the Jamuna, I will fast, I will not drink water, eat food, until the time of my death occurs. Hearing about this, so many great sages, they wanted to be there to experience this great king's departure from the world, because they knew something extraordinary must happen. So Maharaj Prickett asked some questions right in the very beginning. When the sages assembled, he greeted them. He expressed his desire that all he actually wanted, what he wanted was for the future. If he had to take birth again, he would take birth in such a situation where he would feel friendship for all living entities, and he would have the association of devotees, and he would have unflinching rati, attraction for the messages or Krishna Katha, the messages of Krishna, Krishna Katha. It's okay. Because if we have these things, a soft, affectionate heart towards everyone, that means no enmity in our heart towards anyone. Srila Narottama Das Thakur says that envy in the heart is like a spear. Now, how can I be happy if I have a spear in my heart? It's not possible, regardless of where I am. So if I have affection, affectionate, well-being, well-wishing for everyone, and I'm in the association of devotees where nectarian Krishna Katha occurs, and I actually have attraction for Krishna, and that attraction for Krishna is blossoming through the Krishna Katha of the association of devotees, then where I am is wonderful. And let Krishna place me other than that, any other place. Swagapavagana rakeshu apitulyarta darshana. It's actually inconceivable on one level. But a devotee who is fixed in this way, Narayana, thank you. He has no fear. Nakutasthina bibhiti. Just imagine the consciousness of someone who the externals, he's so internally focused on something, on someone who is the cause of so much pleasure for him, so much internal satisfaction, that the externals are irrelevant. And this, of course, is what we are meant to attain, such deep internal relationship with Krishna. Love for Krishna, attraction for Krishna, that we're in our natural constitutional position of happiness. So he sat down and asked the sages, what should I do? And he actually told them what he wanted before he asked them even. Just pour the nectar of Krishna Katha, Vishnu Katha into my ears until the moment I'm passing from this world. This is what I want. Please. And he asked the sages, now please tell me, here I am dying. What should I do? These are my last moments on earth in this body. How should I spend them? What a question. This is the essence of all questions, actually. How should I spend my time in the most profitable way so when the inevitable comes, the inevitable means what? Death. When the inevitable comes, and amazing as it is, it's inevitable for each and every one of us, although we don't live quite like that. But it's inevitable for each and every one of us. So how should I spend my time? What shall I fill my consciousness with? This is the essence of how we spend our time. What shall I fill my consciousness with? Because adishtayam manastayam vishay upasevate. How many of you have ever been in a near-death, life-threatening experience? I'm looking at three people who I know it's definitely happened to. And it's very heavy because one is confronted with the terror of leaving everything that he knows. And what is he holding? So what he knows, what he considers himself is ripped from him. And what will he hold on to? That is the question. What will I hold on to? And what will I hold on to is what I am most attached to. So the question is so relevant. What shall I fill my consciousness with? Because what I fill my consciousness with is what I'm going to become attached to. Attached and aversion, they're the same practically speaking. So what will I fill my consciousness with? And then when Sukadeva goes, and the sages, as sages sometimes are known to be, they couldn't agree. But when Sukadeva Goswami walked into the arena of where Maharaj Prakrit was sitting, everyone else stood up out of respect and they offered him the seat, the honored seat, where everyone would listen to him. And he began speaking the Srimad Bhagavatam to Maharaj Prakrit. So after this happens in the 19th chapter of the first canto, and then after that we all know what happens. It begins the second canto, and then the third canto, and the fourth canto, and the fifth canto, sixth canto, seventh canto, eighth canto, and then the ninth canto, and the ninth, all the cantos have such jewels and gems and such valuable instructions and such taste attached to them. And the ninth canto is very interesting because the dynasties, one after another, dynasties of kings of the sun and the moon dynasty are described. And this king gives birth to these sons. And these sons, there were seven of them, and they're so powerful. And one does this wonderful thing, and his son is named such and such, and he has sons, and he has sons, and he does something so wonderful and so earth-shaking and changing, and then he has sons, and the next generation, and the next generation, one generation is cleared off to make way for the next, and then that generation is cleared away to make for the next. This is what the ninth canto is about. One generation of kings after the next, after the next, after the next, after the next. And then, while describing the descendants of the moon dynasty, Srila Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Prakrit, who is sitting right in front of him, and he explains, then Krishna is born in the moon dynasty. And even though he is born on the Ashtami, because of the moon's dynasty's thrill in having the supreme personality of God, Godhead take birth in his dynasty, the moon itself was full. And thus begins the 10th canto, because Maharaj Prakrit doesn't want to hear so much about the succession of kings, but he wants to hear about Krishna. He wants Krishna to fill his consciousness, Krishna consciousness. So the whole 10th canto, how many chapters in the 10th canto? 90 chapters. Three times larger than any other canto, is filled only with Krishna Katha, direct speaking about Krishna. And then in the 11th canto, the very unfortunate event is foretold, because it is Krishna's plan, because like the sun rises and sets, Krishna comes to this world and then departs and goes to another planet while always remaining in Goloka Vrindavan. But it is time for Krishna's departure. And Uddhava comes to Krishna, who is so close to Krishna, so dear to Krishna. He comes to Krishna and says, I can tell, Uddhava was so intelligent, I can tell by the signs what's going on, the ill omens that are hitting Dwarka, that something inauspicious is going to happen. And you, my dear Lord, the Supreme Lord, are allowing these inauspicious elements to occur. And therefore, I understand that you are leaving this world, because nothing inauspicious can happen in your presence. You are leaving. And I don't want to stay without you. I cannot tolerate being without you. just consider what love for Krishna is like. It makes separation from Krishna, being without his presence for even a moment, intolerable. So Uddhava says, I want to die. I want to go with you. And then Krishna speaks to him what is known as the Uddhava Gita, from the 6th chapter of the 11th canto to the 29th chapter. Krishna gives Uddhava a very intellectual, very powerful, very strong. If you ever want to have an out-of-body experience, read the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam. And in that 11th canto, there are some special verses which actually we'll speak about at the Govardhan retreat. I'll speak about that, where what is deepest in Krishna's heart flows out. Even though he's speaking so much philosophy to Uddhava, his heart opens up, and what is dearest to him comes out of his mouth, his lotus-like mouth. So, in the final two chapters of the 11th canto, it describes the departure from this world of Lord Krishna. Very, very touching. Very touching. And then, after the 11th canto is completed, we know what happens. The 12th canto begins. Now, what I would like to speak of in the next 2 days, Gopinath Prasad, could you just put the first slide on? Is the first 6 chapters of the 12th canto, and they are powerful. I was shocked when I actually read them and studied them carefully. They are powerful. Today we shall speak on the first three chapters. And these chapters will include the final instructions, because Sukadev has come for this purpose. This king's consciousness has attracted him to be present with him until the time of his death. And he's instructed him, first canto, second canto, fifth canto, seventh canto, ninth canto, 10th canto about Krishna, the 11th canto about Krishna. And now the time is nearing for the great king to leave this world. His Bhagavat Saptaha is ending. What will he tell him at this time? What are his final instructions to Maharaj Prickett? We will hear that this morning. Okay. The the 12th canto begins with, naturally, chapter 1, and is entitled The Degraded Dynasties of Kali Yuga, because Krishna has just departed, and Maharaj Prickett, or rather Sukadeva Goswami, without any waiting any questions from Maharaj Prickett, he begins where he left off in the 9th canto. At the end of the 9th canto, because if you remember correctly, what was he recounting in the 9th canto? Raise your hand. The dynasties, yes. But then what stopped him from talking about the dynasties? Because Krishna's birth was there. And Maharaj Prickett and Sukadev both wanted to speak about Krishna. So for 2 cantos, which is so much of the Bhagavatam, the 10th and the 11th canto, was just about Krishna. And now, in the 12th canto, again, he begins where he left off at the end of the 9th canto. Raise your hand if you've read the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. Raise your hand if you've studied the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam. No, I don't want to. So Krishna has just departed. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has a very interesting comment in this regard, and he places it in the first chapter. He says that while Krishna was still on the planet, Kali descended. But he could not exert his influence because of Krishna's presence. Krishna Surya Sam Maya Haya Andhakar. When Krishna is there, there is light, darkness, Kali cannot enter. So Kali complained to Krishna. And he came to Krishna when Krishna was at Kurukshetra. Now, it's not clear, it wasn't clear to me whether it was Kurukshetra at the time of the great battle or Kurukshetra at the time of the great solar eclipse. But he came to Krishna in disguise at Kurukshetra. And he said, "My dear Lord, I cannot do my service of causing hell, basically, to reign in this world. What shall I do?" And Krishna replied, "Don't worry. After I leave, you can begin your mischief very effectively." And he said, "But the great devotees will still be present when you leave. And they will uphold the pillars of religion, which are truthfulness, austerity, cleanliness, and mercifulness, just as strong as they are upheld when you're here in this world." And Krishna explains that after I leave, and after these great devotees in my presence, who are here in my presence, leave, then you will begin your influence. So Kali Yuga's influence begins really after Krishna and the great devotees who were present during his time leave. And then Krishna tells Kali, "And don't worry, I have a secret plan that will make your influence spread like anything. My great devotee, Lord Shiva, will come. And using Vedanta philosophy, he will confuse everything so much with Mayavad philosophy that everyone will think that they are the Supreme Lord and that we are all God. And then it will be so easy for you to spread your influence." And when Kali heard that, he was so happy. So, one of the other important ways that Kali spreads his influence, or the other way around to state it, how Kali's influence is stopped from spreading is through the powerful culture, Vedic culture, where the Brahmins kept within them Vedic knowledge, and the warriors, the Kshatriyas, the kings, governed according to the Vedic knowledge on behalf of the Brahmins. So Kali enters through the lack of culture in the Brahmin boy Sringi when he curses Maharaj Prickett, and then by the power of Kali Yuga, the kings, the Kshatriya kings who rule this world, gradually become degraded. And as they become degraded, as government becomes degraded, as government ceases to uphold spiritual religious principles, the governors become the greatest agents of Kali. I remember when I was young when JFK was the president. Kennedy was the president in the United States. At his inauguration, he didn't wear a hat. The first president, American president, who didn't wear a hat. And the hat industry immediately plummeted. No one wore hats after that. Because what the rulers do, naturally, the ordinary people follow. So in that is the greatest blessing and the greatest curse. And this is what we will hear in this first chapter. So after Maharaj Prickett leaves, which he's speaking about the future, Sukadeva is speaking about the future, his son Janmanjaya takes over, a powerful devotee and powerful warrior. One after the next, the dynasties come. This king follows that king, and this king follows that king. And finally, there is one king whose name, his dynasty's name, is the Nanda king, the Nanda dynasty, and he is not a Kshatriya. He is born of a Kshatriya father and a Sudra woman, and he is powerful. He's compared to a second Parsaram who annihilated the Kshatriyas of this world. But he didn't have the culture and the character of a true Kshatriya. He didn't respect the Brahmin culture, but he was powerful. And his dynasty, so he took over assassinations of kings by their prime ministers started occurring. First time these things started happening. King after king after king. And then in the Nanda dynasty came. And when he started destroying by his power the remainder of the Kshatriya dynasties in this world, the guardians of Vedic culture no longer remained. And then, after the 10th Nanda ruler came, he insulted one Brahmana whose name was Chanakya. The culture was lost. And Chanakya untied his sika and vowed, "I shall not tie my sika again until this dynasty is finished." The Brahmins were powerful. And he said, Chandragupta Maurya. He recognized him. And he personally, Chanakya destroyed by his great intelligence in Rajniti, his diplomacy. He destroyed the Nanda dynasty. Kali Yuga was moving forward. The Maurya dynasty was established. And the grandson of Chandragupta Maurya was known as, according to the Bhagavatam, Ashokavardhana. Very famous. Maharaj Ashok, his chakra is on the flag of India. He was so powerful that he conquered, practically speaking, all of India and united it. But then, when he was in Orissa after one great battle, he saw the blood that has been shed to establish him as king. And his heart, Kshatriya heart, cracked. And he became a Buddhist. Nonviolence. Now, in today's world, we think of this as so heroic. Nonviolence, ahimsa paramo dharma. But actually, it was just part of Kali's plan. Because when Buddhism was established, then the Vedic culture, the Vedas, that was the essential part of Buddhism. We don't follow the Vedas. We are nonviolent. Get rid of the sacrifices. Kali had knocked out the Vedic scriptures as authority by this. And then after that, one step, one dynasty after the next came. The next king, his sons, assassinations, ruining this dynasty. That dynasty comes. The kings were debauchers like anything after a while. No culture, which means no absolute point of reference between what is right and what's wrong. Everything is gray. This is not good. This is not bad. Nothing is clear. You can do anything. Kali was laughing. And just if he was laughing then, imagine what he's doing now. So then gradually, the kings destroyed. The culture destroyed. And then the kings come and they have such terrible character and they just exploit the citizens. They increase the taxes like anything. And the citizens suffer. They have no character. They have no morals. And the citizens following their rulers become just like that. The leaders lie and get caught taking intoxicants, having illicit sex. And what do the ordinary citizens do? Because these are the natural tendencies of everyone in Kali Yuga. The citizens just follow the leader. No regulative principles. So, chapter 1 ends with it describing the devastation of the Vedic culture, and Kali is more and more powerful. Chapter 2 describes the symptoms of Kali Yuga. Now, excuse me as I've excerpted out a few of them that are described here. I will read them. Day by day, and I've seen this, and you have probably seen this, day by day, it gets worse. Religion, day by day. Nowadays, no one wants to have anything to do with religion. Because what happens in Kali Yuga, all authorities, religious authorities, secular authorities, they are proven to be corrupt. You have to be a fool to follow these people. One time I was in a store years ago, and one of the ordinary people in the store was talking to one of the ordinary customers, asking, they were talking about the price of something. And the storekeeper lady said so sarcastically, "Trust me, I'm a priest." And my heart thought, oh, this is terrible. Because the point was, the last person you can trust after used car salesmen and lawyers is priests. And the rulers, there's no country, practically speaking, where the government, people have trust in the government, that the government is transparent and honest and not cheating. Nowhere. This is terrible, because this is the trusting of authority. If we can't trust the rulers and the priests and the parents, broken, divorced, this, that, and this and that, then how are we going to trust Krishna ultimately? The society is supposed to be managed in such a way that it sets up a situation where we can place our faith in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, not be trained and conditioned not to have faith in anyone. So, everything in Kali Yuga going down day by day by day. Truthfulness, cleanliness, tolerance, mercy, strength, duration of life, and memory. Nowadays, no one even knows what day of the week it is until you pull out your mobile phone. Prabhupada said to not know the day of the week is a kind of insanity. Men and women in Kali Yuga, they will get together just on attraction. And I like you, Prabhupada has said. That means nothing. Because if you like someone today, you won't like them tomorrow. Families broken by Kali Yuga. Success in business will come by deceit, tricking, lying. A Brahmin will be called a Brahmin just by his thread, regardless if he's initiated, regardless if he knows anything, regardless if he's a rickshawwala, regardless of anything. If I have my thread, I am a Brahmin. No principles. A person in Kali Yuga, if he has no money, even if he's learned and if he's cultured, he will be considered that there's something wrong with him very deeply and he's unholy. Previously, people's character, how they acted in life, this is how they would judge good or bad, holy or unholy. But now there is one criterion, wealth. And herein is a great difference between the ancient culture, ancient Vedic culture specifically, and contemporary culture. Who is most respected nowadays? You take a person, you take the richest person, who's again our Bill Gates right now. So why is he respected so much and revered so much, or the other Steve Jobs and things? Why? Because they had nothing. They had nothing, and they built up the greatest fortune. From nothing to fortune. And then the Vedic culture, who is revered. Someone who has so much wealth, born into a situation with wealth, and renounces it for nothing on the material level. Exactly the opposite. The six Goswamis, they're every Tuchavad. They take the wealth of the world as insignificant because they're relishing something deeper on a far more important level. Something that actually brings satisfaction. What to speak of eternal benefit. Beauty in Kali Yuga will depend on hairstyle, length of hair. Filling the belly gradually will be the only goal of life. If you can eat a good meal, that will be success. That means food is going to become more and more scarce. Strength in politics. Whoever is strongest, regardless of one's qualification, whoever is strong will gain power. And the citizens will be harassed by taxes and drought, no rain, and they will suffer from cold, wind, heat, snow, rain, and quarrels. Continuously suffering from quarrels. Upadrutaha. Everyone's mind is continuously disturbed by quarreling with everyone. We even quarrel with ourselves all day long. Hunger, thirst, disease, and severe anxiety. Severe anxiety is a symptom, a symptom of Kali Yuga. And gradually, towards the end of Kali Yuga, maximum age, 50 years old, no vanashram. Religions will be atheistic, from Mayavad, impersonalism, to New Age, to atheism. There's no steps, practically speaking. Buddhism, atheism, religious atheism. People will have the characteristics of sudras. And this you can observe in Vrindavan today. Ashrams will be no different from mundane houses and hotels, because everyone with the building boom in Vrindavan, they build this ashram, and they call it an ashram, but actually it's a guest house. That's all. And people, these are the words of the Bhagavatam, people, practically speaking, will become like donkeys. Just working, working, carrying the load of work and existence on their backs for their lives, tired and still being beaten, forced to work, and having to submit themselves to that creature known as a boss. You have to do what the boss says, because otherwise there are thousands of other people who will take your job. And then, also described in this chapter, is the end of Kali Yuga, when Kalki will come, the avatar Kalki, and riding what village is he born in? Sambalpur. And where is that? Orissa, as far as I know. Sambalpur is in Orissa. At least there is one Sambalpur in Orissa. So he will come, and all the people disguised as kings, the rogues and thieves exploiting the people, and there will be many of them. To survive, there will just be bands of people, like tribes, and they will fight each other continuously. And Kalki will come with his sword and kill and kill and rid the earth of these people. And then, by the fragrance of his body carrying by the wind, that fragrance will enter the hearts of the remaining people and purify their hearts completely. And then they will be inspired by the Lord to give birth to progeny, more children, more population, and Satyuga will begin again. So Kalki rescues eternal religious principles. Now, in the third chapter, it is called the Bhumi Gita. And in the first 13 verses of the Bhumi Gita, Mother Earth, she laughs in a lamenting way. She says, these kings, they are so foolish. And when I read this, these verses, I don't think that it is those kings who are foolish, because I am thinking myself the king of some little kingdom, my little territory that I've carved out, and I'm trying to control it for the purpose of enjoying it and fighting off anyone who tries to interfere with my kingdom of enjoyment. So the earth laments at the foolishness of these kings, and she laughs at their foolishness. Just see, these kings are like playthings in the hands of death, and they're driven. What is the engine that drives them? It is lust. Even if they are learned, the engine that is driving their life is lust, and they end up always frustrated and failing because they have faith in their bodies as themselves. O kings, she says these bodies are fleeting. She compares our body to the bubbles on the ocean. They appear and disappear so quickly, and yet we put our whole lives into trying to establish some kingdom in which I am the ruler. And without even knowing where I am going in my next life, I want to make sure that my kingdom will be passed carefully into the hands of my children without knowing where I will go. What is the use, she says, of their austerities, and they're so self-controlled and focused, if it is just to gain things that are stolen away from them by death? Don't they see what has happened to all the Napoleons? The past empires with their emperors, don't they see what has happened to them? Do they not think that this will also happen to them? And to conquer me, they fight one another. Father fighting son, brother fighting brother, and their hearts simply try to possess power, thinking all this is mine, it is not yours, you fool. Thus, they're attached and they fight each other and die. Now, this has captured everyone's attention. But now Sukadev, remember, Sukadev is speaking to dying Maharaj Prickett, and he's just spoken about Krishna. And now, but now what is he going to say? Next verse. He's going to explain why he has done this. Because why has he talked about all these kings in the ninth canto and here in these chapters just before Maharaj Prickett's dying, and he's talking about all these kings? What is his purpose? This is so important for us to understand, because our Krishna consciousness movement has a purpose, and it is not just to criticize the rascals, which are very well and alive within us, usually. But there is a purpose. And now, he's going to explain in two verses what the purpose is. First, Sukadev says, O mighty Parikit, I have related to you the narrations of all these great kings who spread their fame throughout the world and then departed. What is an impolite way to say they departed? They died. They spread their fame and then they left They died. My real purpose was to teach transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Vijnana Vairagya Vavikshaya. Stories of kings lend power and opulence to these narrations. But, they do not themselves constitute the ultimate aspect of knowledge. Paramatyam, paramartika, means the actual supreme knowledge. Knowledge that we are not our body. Knowledge that we should live our life with a purpose. It's so important. So therefore, we criticize others. The materialists, the fools and the rascals for living the way they do. And in that way, we criticize ourselves for holding on to these material concepts of life and being beaten by the motive passion and ignorance to participate so strongly and wholeheartedly in material life. But this is not the purpose of the, either the Krishna consciousness movement or what Sukadeva Goswami wants to say. And this is what he wants to say. Here is the Sanskrit. Yes, too. And this means, on the other hand, yes, too means on the other hand, uttama sloka guna, the qualities of he who is praised by the topmost verses. And who is that? That is Krishna in his incarnations. But especially Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. To vada, sangiyate, to sing the power of these uttama sloka guna, the qualities of the Supreme Lord, if they are sung abhikshanam constantly, amangalagna. Mangala means auspicious. Amangala means inauspicious. Na means removed. The power of constantly hearing about Krishna and singing his glories, it removes all inauspiciousness from the heart. And we will get to this point very, very soon. So I won't grab it right now. But the inauspiciousness, the foolishness, the insanity, the tamagun, the rajagun that has set up permanent, seemingly permanent establishments in our heart and our consciousness, this is our process of removing it. And then we'll jump to the last line, Krishne means of Krishna. Amalam. Malam means impure. Amalam means pure. Bhakti. Abhipshamana. He who desires pure amala, bhakti to Krishna, he should tam eva. Indeed, nityam, regularly, shrinuyat. Hear about Krishna, abhikshanam, again, constantly. And in his commentary on this verse, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains, we should hear nityam, means daily or regularly, about Krishna. And then the heart is purified and the positive occurs. That bhakti sprouts within the heart. Because this is the question always, how to purify the heart and make bhakti grow. Well, here is the process spoken directly in the purpose of all these narrations. And pure devotional service will grow in the heart. But this is not actually news in a sense, because it's been what has been stated all along. As soon as Srila Vyasadeva, prior to him writing the Bhagavatam, he had a divine revelation. He meditated on the Supreme Lord, and he had a revelation where he saw Krishna and his energies, including the material energy. And then, anarta upasamam shakshad bhakti yogad hoshaje lokasya ajanato vidvant chakre sakrit satvita samat. He wrote the Bhagavatam based on this revelation to remove the anartas from the heart. And then, what's the next verse? How does it begin? Bhaktim paramapuruse. Thank you, Prabhu. That bhakti upadyate, the last word is? Upayabaha. That bhakti sprouts in the heart by virtue of hearing this Bhagavatam. It sprouts. And if we care for this sprout properly, it will grow into a luxuriant plant. And after it grows into a luxuriant plant, by hearing about the Supreme Lord Krishna, Uttama Sloka, the bhakti will grow into a plant. And that plant will take shelter in Goloka Vrindavan. And it will give its fruit. And what is the fruit of this plant? It is prema bhakti. It is love for Krishna. And that will fully satisfy the self, the soul, me. Next. The person, here's the translation. The person who desires pure devotional service. Now, when we read the Bhagavatam, we have to place ourselves in the position of a hearer, an eager hearer. The person who desires pure devotional service. Yes. Prabhu, I want my Bhagavatam back. Thank you. Thank you for caring for the Bhagavatam. Poranako dunodita. It has arisen in Kali Yuga. Thank you. Please. The person who desires, not everyone, but the person who desires pure devotional service to Krishna should hear the narrations of Lord Uttama Sloka's glorious qualities, the constant chanting of which destroys everything inauspicious. So much hope for us residents of Kali Yuga. The devotee should engage in such listening in regular daily assemblies and should also continue his hearing throughout the day. This is the text. Now, end part one of not the class, actually, but end part one of this presentation. Now we will begin part two. Hold on tight. Or better still, fasten your seatbelts. Now Maharaj Prickett hears this. Thank you. And he asks five questions. And these are the final questions that he will ask in the entire Bhagavatam. He asks, first, what I will say is the question that I long to ask and get the answer to. He asks, Because we've heard about the kings and the fall of the Kshatriya kings brought about the expansive age of Kali, bringing its influence, which causes so much distress to everyone, increasing day by day. And the first question is going to be, how can I remove this contaminations? And later on, he's going to say, Sukadeva is going to say, and please listen to this, the contaminations of Kali Yuga are in every place, in every object, and in every person, within our very selves. Now, where are we going to hide from Kali Yuga when it's in every place, everything we touch, and even within ourself? And that's going to be what he's going to answer. Sukadeva is going to answer this question, what to do about this practically all-pervading influence of Kali Yuga that brings so much misery and suffering to each and every person who is conditioned by this age. That's his first question. Second question, so I've put it brief, this is what he asks, but I jumped ahead a little bit. Explain the different historical ages, the four ages, Satyuga, Dwapara Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, and then Kali, and describe the qualities of each age. That's three questions. Then the fourth question, explain the duration of the creation and the destruction of the cosmos, and explain the movements of time, which is Ishwara Rupasya. This is the form of Krishna. Kalosmin Loka Jaya Krit. This is Krishna acting in this world. It is the time factor. Explain, this is his final question, how does it work and what does it do? So the last two questions, 4 and 5, we will answer. We will hear Sukadeva's answer tomorrow. And these first three questions, we will hear his answer to right now. He starts not with the first question. What was the first question? Testing everyone's memory. Well, at least for me, that's a very relevant question. And the second two, anyone remember the second question? Different yugas, the second and third, what are the qualities, what are the qualities of the different yugas, and explain about them. So, So that's, he begins, Sukadeva begins speaking to Maharaj Prakrit, who's soon to die. These two, he starts with the second and third question. He explains Satyuga, I will go over Satyuga and Treta Yuga and Dwapara Yuga quite briefly. Just in essence, there's such an interesting distinction he explains. He said in Satyuga, there is no Vanashrama. Everyone follows the Vedic culture. Just, they do everything just because this is the proper way. This is what Krishna has said. Lord Vishnu Krishna has said, this is how you should act. This is how I will act. In Treta Yuga, people still follow Vanashrama, or they follow the Vedic culture, and it takes the form of Vanashrama, but something enters, and that is passion. And they want a result from their following. And the result they want is the happiness that the Vedas give. passion has entered. Then in Dwapara Yuga, people still follow the Vedas. And they get happiness. They have large, happy families. You can still, and they enjoy these things. And they have wealth coming from but some ignorance comes. Pride comes. And because pride comes, ignorance comes. And they begin to get pleasure. And this is inconceivable in Kali Yuga. They begin to get pleasure from sinful activities. Just imagine there was a time when people did not get their concept of pleasure was completely different from meat eating, illicit sex, gambling, and intoxication. This is a recent injection by Kali due to the mode of ignorance, getting pleasure from things that cause suffering. That defines ignorance. Wanting to do what is killing you, enthusiastic to do what is killing you. What can be more foolish and ignorant than that? And in Kali Yuga, the ignorance increases day by day by day. Now, at this time, when describing more of Kali Yuga, Sukadev gives more of the qualities just to refresh these points in our mind, how bad Kali Yuga is, so that when the cure is given, we'll take it with two arms, two hands. And if we had 15 hands, we'd take it more quickly and more tightly and hold on to it because it is life itself. So more symptoms of Kali Yuga: poverty, unfortunate, lustful, women wandering freely from man to man, cheating, lying, laziness, sleepiness, violence, depression, cities filled with thieves, atheists speculating, priests and intellectuals will simply be devotees of their bellies and genitals. Cows, when they stop giving milk, they will be killed. Inconceivable in the Vedic culture. Taxes increase, fear, and people in Kali Yuga will gradually appear as if they are ghostly haunted. Have you ever been downtown in any Western city? Especially when the sun sets. They will kill their friends and family members over a few coins. They will no longer protect their elderly family members, their elderly parents, or children, or their respectable wives. They will only care about their own belly and genitals. And it will be hell. You have something. I'm more strong than you. You are weak. You are old. You are not armed. And I want what you have. I will kill you. Frightened enough? At the end of Kali Yuga, he describes two more characteristics which indirectly glorify the Lord. Although the great personalities who control the three worlds, and after I read this, I want to say what property, what quality this indicates within a man that causes him to be like this. Although the great personalities who control the three worlds all bow down to the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, the petty and miserable human beings of this age will not do so. They are petty, they are miserable, but they will not bow down. What quality is that? Pride, unlimited pride, even though people have nothing to be proud of. But the great personalities bow down to the Supreme Lord. It glorifies Him. Another quality of Kali Yuga, which glorifies the Lord. Someone is terrified, about to die. A man, he collapses on his deathbed. Although his voice is faltering, he's hardly conscious of what he's saying. If only he would utter the holy name of the Supreme Lord, he can be freed from the reactions of his fruitive work, and he will achieve the supreme destination. He may be sinful, but if he utters the name of Krishna when he's dying, he will achieve the supreme destination. This we will speak of in a few moments. But still, people in the age of Kali will not worship the Supreme Lord. What quality of the Supreme Lord is shown here? He's merciful. He's a bigger word beginning with an M. He's magnanimous. What does magnanimous mean? His heart is so open that if you just chant His name when you're dying, regardless of who you are, even unconsciously, like Ajamil, you will achieve Him, the supreme destination. But people in Kali Yuga, you say chant, they say can't. What to do? And now, this verse I was mentioned before, Pumsam Kali Kritan Doshan. What does Doshan mean? All the faults that Kali has given in a person, in Dravya, the objects, the desha, the place, in the Atma, in the person himself, Sambhavan. They are based on these things. In the person himself, Kali is manifesting all his doshas, faults. But sarvam harati chitta sto, that all of them are stolen away. Harati here means stolen away by Bhagavan Purushottama. Chitta sto, when he's in the heart. Now we are moving forward to the prescription very directly spoken. O King, translation, in the age of Kali, people's intelligence will be diverted by atheism, and they will almost never offer sacrifice to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is this. Whoops, we're going in the wrong direction there. Yeah. In Kali Yuga, objects, places, and even into. It goes this way. Excuse me. This is how the translation goes. O King, in the age of Kali, people's intelligence will be diverted by atheism, and they will almost never offer sacrifice to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the Supreme Spiritual Master of the universe. In Kali Yuga, objects, places, this is the translation, and even individual personalities are all polluted. Do you experience this sometimes, that we sincerely want to move forward in our devotional service, and then some Kali enters right in and awakens another part of us in our personality who decides he's going to take over? So even on the individual personalities are polluted. But yet, the Almighty, and He is Almighty, He can do it. No one, nothing else can do it. He can remove all such contaminations from the life of one who fixes the Lord within his mind. Chitto, sto, within the consciousness. Chitto, heart also. Continuing. Now Sukadeva is speaking these final words, final instructions. These are the final instructions to the king who is about to die. And this is what they are. If a person hears about, if he glorifies, if he meditates upon, or worships, or simply offers great respect to the Supreme Lord who is situated within the heart, the Lord will remove from his mind, that person's mind, the contaminations accumulated during many thousands of lifetimes. Sukadeva's instruction is full of hope. We can overcome it all by the presence of Krishna within the heart, the consciousness, the mind. Just as fire applied to gold removes any discoloration caused by traces of other metals, Lord Vishnu within the heart purifies the minds of the yogis. By one's engaging in the process of demigod worship, austerities, breath control, compassion, even bathing in holy places. This is the Vedic culture. Strict vows, charity, chanting of various mantras. By doing these things, one's mind cannot attain the same absolute, complete, full purification as that achieved when the unlimited personality of Godhead appears within one's heart. Now, we're reaching the end, and I've spoken for a long time, but because this is the conclusion of the instructions that Maharaj Prickett is hearing just before he's dying. This is what Sukadeva Goswami, the last thing he's saying, because this is what is meant to stick in his heart. There'll be some twists and turns that still will happen, but this is practically speaking the actual instruction that he's giving. Not the next four verses. Tasmat savatmanam rajan. Excuse me, just for one moment here. Tasmat savatmanam rajan. Therefore always means we're reaching a conclusion. Savatmana rajan, O king. Endeavor, savatmana, with all your mind. Ride stam kuru keshavam. With situate keshava within your heart. Endeavor to do this. Mriyamano means when you are going to die, while dying. Avahatas, you concentrate and situate the Lord in your heart. Tato yasi param gatim, and you will attain the param gatim, the supreme destination, the translation. Therefore, O king, endeavor with all your might. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this, what Jiva Goswami explains, this is what Maharaj Prickett should now do. With all your might, with all your strength, with all your mind means, Jiva Goswami says, with all your endeavor. That is what we must bring to the process. We must try and endeavor. And maintain this concentration upon the Lord. And at the time of death, you will certainly, certainly, he attain the supreme destination. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Ajamil attained such a result by inattention. But you, being such an empowered, pure devotee, will be attentive. And you will attain Krishna. My dear King, the personality of Godhead is the ultimate controller. He is the supreme soul and the supreme shelter of all beings. Now, he's Sarvatma and Sarvasamsraya, the supreme shelter and the supreme controller, the ultimate controller, the supreme soul, Sarvatma. These two words are very important here. But he's the supreme shelter of all beings. Well, when meditated upon by those about to die, he reveals to them their own eternal spiritual identity. Atma Bhavam. The Bhava of the Atma. Who you are. He reveals it. We meditate upon him in a certain way, and he will reveal that completely. These are the words of Sukadev Goswami, the final words, practically speaking, or the final instructions. Now, to this, there's a short comment by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. How does he know what we're thinking of when we're dying? He's Sarvatma. He's in your heart. He's in everyone's heart. He will know what you are thinking of in the exact mood you are thinking of it. And he will give you that. So therefore, Ante Narayano Smriti Adishyam Manasteyam Visha Upasevate Tad Bhava Bharata. Whatever we are thinking, that mood, it's so important to cultivate the right mood in life so that we pass in the right mood. Then he asks the question, well, why, and this is the literal translation, why will the Lord give you the Atma Bhava, the prem? Why will he give prem just to a person who meditates upon him at the time of death? And his answer to that is because he is the Sarvasamsraya. He is the shelter of everyone. The shelter. He wants to give this. And he is our shelter. And he wants us to take it. To take shelter of him. And therefore, Bhagavad Gita, he says, Sarvatamam Pityaja Mame Kam Saranam Pasa. And then he says, because, and from him, he has the power to do this because the results of all sadhana comes from him. And then he ends by saying, what is remarkable about this for the Lord? He is so magnanimous. He is so giving. We offer him a leaf or a fruit or water, and he gives himself. So this is not remarkable. This is who we are dealing with. This is whom we are being asked to meditate upon, the most magnanimous of all personalities. And here, he's going to describe the final words on how to do this. And these are very famous verses. Kalo, everyone. Kaler doshinad hei rajan astieko mahan guna kirtanade vikrishnasya muktisanga parambrajet. Because Kali Yuga is so contaminated, and in every way, there is only one thing he is saying that is so powerful. My dear king, although Kali Yuga is an ocean of faults, there is still one good quality about this age. Simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, one can become freed from material bondage and be promoted to the transcendental kingdom. And then finally, Kriti yadhyayato vishnun, everyone, Tretayam yajato makai dvapare paricharyayam kalotad dhari kirtanat. Whatever result was obtained in Satyayuga by meditating on Vishnu, in Tretayuga by performing sacrifices, in Dwapara Yuga by serving the Lord's lotus feet, can be obtained in Kaliyuga by simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And thus, this chapter ends. And thus, the most intimate final instructions to Purikkhita end. I will not end yet, but there's only 1 or 2 minutes left. Comments by Vishwanath Chakravarti, Jiva Goswami. Chanting the Lord's name is the best austerity for the people. It's the simplest of austerities. And people should particularly, this should be particularly be performed in Kali Yuga to please the Lord. So this is what is motivating the devotees while they chant, to please him. Now here is one of my favorite quotes, and there's only one more after this. Srila Jiva Goswami cites from the Vishnu Purana, the moment that one does not think of Vasudev, the moment that one does not think of Vasudev, that moment immediately becomes destructive, full of faults, illusion, and mistakes. Yes, I think, yes, I can kindly repeat it. This is from Vishnu. I could tell you where it comes from in Jiva Goswami after. The moment that one does not think of Vasudev, that moment immediately becomes destructive, full of fault, illusion, and mistakes. Now the final quotation of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, in which I will end the class. Now it is said that Kali Yuga is the best of all yugas in 2 verses. Though Kali is an ocean of faults, one good quality prevails like a king that prevails in his kingdom. As one king alone kills many thieves, this one good quality destroys all the faults of Kali that we have mentioned. And what is that one quality? It is through chanting alone, which is independent of meditation and other processes, one attains the highest human goal of prema. Or chanting alone produces results. This is the meaning that I really like. Chanting alone can produce the results. What to speak of when it is combined with meditation and all the other processes of bhakti while chanting? On that note, to bring us deeper into the importance of what we are doing during our holy name retreat, we will end the class and ask everyone again to please pray for the strength to use their time very wisely here while we are in Bharsana, chanting Krishna's names in the association of devotees, blessed by Srila Prabhupada and C.C. Gornatai and C. Radha Govinda. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinda ki jai. Nitai Gaur Premanande. Hare Krishna.